Confident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. When we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. So nice to have you with us this evening, this March the 12th on the west coast of the United States, March the 13th now on the east coast and in the central time zone, and of course on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean as well. Our guest tonight hails from Europe, points beyond, and he has been on the show a number of times now, and he's becoming a not just a regular guest on Evident Footprints, but a very positive and unique guest, because he's got a very peaceful, laid-back way of looking at all the chaos going on in the world and sort of sorts it all out and just puts it out for the garbage collector every week. And we're going to talk about some things that are going on throughout the world, not just here in the United States, but also overseas. Our guest has written a book, which is called, and I have to grab myself here because my mind is traveling at 1,000 miles an hour, and I'm getting pinged in my headphones. Anyway, he's written a book called Fragments of Reality, Daily Entries of Lived Life. And he is an entrepreneur and, let's say, a business manager, especially in the technical industries. And he's got a lot of valuable experience in those areas and a lot of spiritual insight to what makes people tick and what doesn't make them tick. And we're going to try to sort some of that out and bring things into a perspective that will empower us to make correct decisions and not succumb to fear and to sort of get out of the box, to get out of the matrix. And with that, I welcome back to Evident Footprints my now good friend, Pete Kayander. Pete, how are you this evening?
Good evening, Don. Yeah, I'm doing great.
It's evening for us, it's morning for me, and it's morning for you. So I should say good morning.
Yeah, that's more appropriate here. I mean, definitely this morning, you know, the daylight saving caught me. It's 6 a.m., not 7 a.m., like it used to be in the earlier recordings.
Yeah. So at least you're awake. We roused you out of bed early this morning. things seem, since the last time you were on, things seem to be moving even faster. I don't know if you've perceived that, where you live and amongst the various people that you talk to, on the eastern side of the Atlantic Ocean. What are your perceptions? What are you noticing, around you?
Yeah, certainly things maybe speeding up. I think it's subjective to your own perspective and also what are you looking at. If you look at the news, yeah, certainly things are happening, but, you know, like they always are, it's just a matter of, you know, what is reported and how it's reported. And for a very long time, I don't even remember anymore. I haven't been really watching news. It's just one perspective and selected selection or collection of things which some people have decided that are important or somehow they want to influence people on those things. So, well, there's always typically accidents and negative things in the news. So, you know, it's one way to see the world, but it's definitely not the only one. So, from my perspective, you know, this is something I just... more I'm curious, but, you know, nothing else. So, yeah, it might be that, you know, things are speeding up in a way, but it's very subjective and based on your consciousness, you know. And certainly I've been experiencing that early on, but I don't know whether it's speeding up now might be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are different ways to look at this, too, because I watch very little TV, if any at all. Most of the time, the TV is off, and I really I find nothing that interests me. So I read or I do some research. I involve myself with music, of course, and I prepare for my show. I spend time, let's say, discussing my research and that. And these topics that are in the news come out. Somebody will say to me, "Did you hear about the this or the that?" And I say, "No, I haven't." And they expect me, I guess, to know everything that's being reported on the news. It's not like I'm listening to the news all the time. You know what I mean? You want to keep track of what's going on, I think, with the financial situations, because it's going to impact everybody. What's going on with the banks and that. If you have your money in the bank, it's really going to impact you if you're not prepared for what's going on. And most people aren't even aware of what's going on, you know, because, like you said, the media reports the negative things, and they don't really like to report the truth about what's going on in the financial world because of the amount of corruption. And that's the aspect that most people can't grasp. So they see things are not right and they feel things aren't right, but they can't really put their finger on what it is because they're not hearing the truth. And so, you know, I honor the stance that you're taking because you're discerning for yourself what's going on, and it really doesn't matter what I say or anyone else says, let alone a newscaster, that's going to have an impact on your consciousness, you know, your awareness of yourself and the things that you're involved in. Yet we're all experiencing something on one level or another, and so there's a lot of chaos going on. That's what I pick up. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's obviously a lot of chaos in a sense that the, so to speak, old world or the way we've been used to do things is not working anymore. And yeah, my take on it is that I'm rather calm or don't worry about it because I've seen it coming and it's quite evident. And if you also look at the facts, you know, it's been known. So there's no new, it's old news in a way.
Yeah.
But for let's say regular people, it's obviously not so nice, and you just see things falling apart, and nothing makes sense, and nothing is working anymore, and you know you don't know what's going to happen next, and mm-hmm. so this creates a lot of stress, and also when there's a chance that you don't have a job tomorrow, that makes life a bit more difficult. We also are approaching times, you know, when the economy is not getting better, even though they're saying it's getting better, but I think it's still getting worse, and looking what the governments are doing, you know, it doesn't improve the situation, it's just mm-hmm. making it worse. They're printing money now, they're starting to print money. Well, they've been printing money all along, but, you know, now they're especially emphasizing, and it's in the news that, for example, the Bank of England is printing money, and the European Central Bank is no better in that sense. They officially cannot do it, but they have found a way to do it, and this is what they're doing to keep up the governments alive.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a shell game, isn't it? You know, you have three shells and one pea, and you move them around, and you know, if you can follow where the pea is, as the shells move from one position to the next, you follow the money. But they are quite adept because they're doing this with computers, and they're doing this with many illegal transactions, actually. They're not doing this above board. This is all secret with the intention of destroying the world's economies. I mean, this is the awareness that is coming to people here in the States. They're beginning to see this now. You see, it's affecting them. Not only are they losing jobs, not only are prices escalating, goods are starting to become scarce. You know, you can have food on the shelves for 3 days and, if there's a panic, and then the shelves will be bare. We see images, photographs of thousands and thousands of cars parked in lots at ports of entry, or at the manufacturer's lots, or at, even in at the dealerships. They're sitting there and no one's buying them. So those industries are hurting. But you see, when they were skimming the money off of these companies and diverting it elsewhere, nobody spoke up about it. Now they're all suffering the consequences. And those of us who have been delivering the truth about these things, letting people know, hey, this is going on, you should pay attention to this, you should voice your concerns about this to your representatives in the government, well, you know, they get voiced, but they don't care. They're following another agenda, you see? So this is all being orchestrated. Now, if it's one thing to recognize it and then just determine how you're going to deal with it, and it's another either to be in denial about it or to become fearful and react in a negative way because you're acting out of fear. You know, it's like you mentioned people are worrying. Worrying never solved any problem. You know, it just complicates them. Any thoughts on that? Are you seeing that same mindset in the people you come in contact with?
Yeah. Well, I would actually like to comment a bit about the definite and on purpose destruction of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it sounds, in a way, it sounds quite funny that someone wants to destroy it on purpose. But on the other take, if we look at the history of economical matters in U.S. and in other parts of the world, it's just one long continuity which has been going on for a few hundred years now, and I would say that it's just the inevitable fact what's going to happen, and whether someone would like to do it or not, it will happen anyway, and this is exactly why. Well, this is the reason for this is that we're using now fractional reserve banking system, and
mm-hmm.
on its basis, it's a fraud, and
yeah.
It's been just going on for so many years that and decades and centuries that you know it is becoming the it's the regular way of doing things, and nobody even understands that there's something wrong with the system. But it's only on the times when things are not going so well, it's coming the bust of the boom cycle, when we start to realize that things are not okay, and people are claiming capitalism and other things. But you know, on the core of the issue is just the government and the government's greed of money, and they want to take the money no matter what are the means for it. And the easiest way to do it nowadays is to print money and cause inflation to take wealth from other people and deliver it to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just one of the in the series of booms and busts. But due to the changes in the currencies in the 70s, U.S. going off to the finally off the so to speak gold standard and going completely on fiat paper, it meant that we are now in we basically have a one world currency, that's the U.S. dollar. And each and every currency we're having now is tied to the U.S. dollar, and this means that they cannot either go too far away above or below the ratios they're having with U.S. dollar. So each and every central government is printing money, and they have to do it, you know, for the internal political or external forces which are coercing and pressing them to keep up with the other currencies. So what we see maybe the most, well, I think we first see the things in U.S., but the rest of the governments in Europe and also in Asia and other parts of the world are following. So in a sense, if you look back in the 30s or in 20s, Germany, or we're looking back to the situation in the U.S., it's pretty similar. So, you know, the history is repeating itself. And it's repeating itself for a purpose because we're doing exactly the same things. The New Deal is coming again, you know, the, all the good things which came in the 20s, 30s, so to speak, good things, you know. Some call Great Depression, you know, for example, was one of these, so to speak, good things which came out of this banking system. So we now heading the same situation, and stimulus packages are on the table. And if we look, for example, Japan, it was in the 90s, the long 90s, it was in a slow economic growth. And as a matter of fact, if you check that, the persons of the, how many persons of the GDP Japan has debt, it is 200%, and it's I think on top of the chart. For example, US is still below 100% mark. So even Japan, so to speak, with take years, they say that, you know, they haven't stimulated enough, the economy hasn't grown enough. But, you know, it's seldom the question is asked that whether the cures are the proper ones and whether actually the ultimate reason for these things is not tackled, but we just, so to speak, increase in the fuel for the fire.
Mm-hmm. Now, we one thing that goes very unreported, Pete, is that the Basel II agreement, which is to have all banking transactions be above board and for all nations on the earth to be on the gold standard. The United States has not complied with that. We have had a serious undertaking of embezzlement going on now into the third administration. Okay, this is, and it's happened in this administration in 6 weeks. It's become more prolific than all the embezzlement that took place in the prior 8 years. And I think those
structures, maybe time is speeding up.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Okay, and now this is coming to the awareness of many people. I've been talking about this on this show. I've been writing about it. I've been referring to other people who have been writing about it in other parts of the world. Christopher Story in London comes to mind. And he may not have been right about everything he's written, but he certainly saw this coming, and I see it, and many others see that this has been a concerted effort. This, we're looking at organized crime masquerading as government. And it's in every phase of the economy. It's not just what they're doing with derivatives and hedge funds. It's in the banks. It's in the insurance companies. The holding companies is another word for the insurance companies, because they take your money and they hold it, or they invest it, and they pay it out when they figure a scheme to direct it into their coffers, and to the detriment of the public. And they always do it in a way that the public ends up being indebted to it. This is why you have these bailouts and these scandals going on that you may or may not be hearing about. But we're not hearing what's going on in Europe, and certainly the American people are not aware that we are supposed to be on the gold standard. And so we have a dichotomy here taking place, because they're proclaiming to be doing things that are bringing you know, peace between governments around the world. You have Israel provoking war constantly. We stifled a false flag event before the inauguration in the third week of January, and this show played a major role in that. And most people in the country haven't heard about it, believe it or not. But it doesn't really matter. The people that listen to the show and those that they've talked to, and even the intelligence agencies, know that we stifled an attempt to blow up 7 U.S. cities and blame it on Al-Qaeda, a creation of the CIA. So these are the types of games that are going on, but we're catching drift now through the Internet and a little bit through the media that there are riots going on in Europe. Greece, we hear about riots. France, we hear as many as 1 million people are marching. in protest to what's going on. Iceland has collapsed. The banking system has collapsed. How are those people surviving? And what are you hearing, you know, about the different countries in Europe that we're probably not hearing in the States?
Yeah, there's certainly happening a lot of things, but, you know, all those things you mentioned, they are somehow related to the government. They're somehow related to the public services, and this is typically how it is. But if you look around you, you know, what are you doing in your daily life, you know, going to work, going to the, meet your friends, you know, do you see those things? I mean that, you know, for many people, life is as it used to be. You know, maybe it's just a bit less money and a bit more worries, but, you know, the rest, you know, has it changed? And, well, looking at the economy, hey, we have to eat, we have to, you know, travel, we have to do all these things. So the world doesn't stop. It's just the our ideas, how we do things and why we do those things may change in, along the way. And this is also something the history can tell us. And it can teach us many lessons, for example, what happened in the 20s in Germany when they were having hyperinflation and then they had a deflation a bit later on and the complete monetary system collapsed. And still the life went on, and it didn't take many days or many weeks or many months to settle all the past things and get production and things going again. So while we're looking at all these events happening and reported in the news, it's also good to look to the back to the history and see that, hey, this is not the one time unique things. There has been, you know, situations like this before and this way the world doesn't stop. And there's no reason to fear. There's only different conditions and things happening now slightly, but underneath that they are still the same. Yes, for example, what I can report from Europe and especially Finland, where I'm originally from, now living in Spain, they've been discussing about extending. Well, they're having the governmental pension system, like there's pretty much in every country nowadays, that, you know, you are forced to save part of your income, and it's been well, the fund is run by the government, or the government has a mandate and is given to the private companies, but still de facto it's a government based operation, and it's not completely funded either. So it means that as the saying goes, it's pay as you go system. So those people who are now working are paying for the pension for the people who are now on pension already, so the retired people, and this is in a way Ponzi scheme as well. It's just that it takes a few decades. It takes a bit more longer time. But what the government tried to do in a few weeks back was that they say that we wanna push forward the age of retirement for a few years. And you can imagine people get furious about it. So, you know, if you promise to get to your retirement when you're 63 and you have to work two more years, you're not so pleased about it. And this is something what happened, and now the government has to take it back. They say that, okay, it's just too much media attention, and people be resisting it, and it is no good. Well, evidently, you know, there's no more money, and, you know, the same problem occurs, but, you know, each and every administration before has been just keeping silent about it, and, you know, just hushing about the issue and hoping that they get away with it and the ball is on the next one. And this is, I think, rather typical what is happening. It's just one example, but, you know, this is mainly how the public politics works. So it's not about responsibility and living by your means. It's more like grab everything you can and run and hope that you will get away with it.
Yeah. Well, they're making money out of thin air. We know that. And if they're running out of money, then they must be running out of thin air. Now, taking into account that Al Gore won the Pulitzer Prize for his theory and his book on global warming, the air might be a little hotter, it might rise a little bit higher, but what am I getting to? You know, this is all smoke and mirrors anyway. It's all an illusion. And that's the thing that that people have difficulty understanding. They don't really understand the monetary system. And in light of how many people are on the planet, yes, if you have a lot of people that are living off the system and they are not productive, if they're not contributing to the system, there's a problem there. In the States, pensions are one thing. Pensions are related to your job, putting money into a fund, but they're taking money for Social Security too, you see. And that's a government program where the pension is a corporate program. And you're not forced to put money into a pension account, but what they do in both cases, they spend the money. They take it or they invest it and they take the profits and keep them for themselves and their cohorts in the banking industries, or they outright steal it and hide it in offshore accounts or wherever they can hide it, underground bases, you name it. Maybe they're stuffing it in their mattresses. Who knows? But the point is that they're dishonoring the people that willingly pay into that system, okay? That's a crime. That's a criminal element that's performing those activities. And it's the very same people making the laws. You know, this is a serious problem if the Earth is even going to exist in the future. There's going to be a point where people are going to finally catch on. All those people that paid into Social Security that are told, well, we have no money in the Social Security program. All the people that paid into pension funds that now the pensions funds have actually been stolen by elements in the government. And what they do is they set up the people who own these businesses and are the caretakers of these pensions in a roundabout way. They set them up and put them in jail. And they're not stealing the funds. In most cases, it's the government doing it, you see. So this is an element of organized crime. And then what do they do on the television? They show movies about the mob, you know, about the mafia, about machine guns and robbing banks and murdering each other, as if that somehow glorifies what they're doing. We see it on the TV and we see it in the news. The same thing is going on. You probably heard of Bernie Madoff, the broker that supposedly scammed people out of $50 billion on a Ponzi scheme. That's a drop in the bucket compared to the amount.
Yeah, they donated voluntarily. It was mainly institutional people who gave the money. So they should have been, you know, diligent what they're doing, and they most likely neglected what they, you know, their responsibilities in giving the money.
Yeah, well, they're waiting for that 40% return they were promised, you see.
Yeah, great.
Where you and I put our money in the bank account and we're told we get 1.5% or 1.75% or some ridiculous amount. It really doesn't matter. And then when you go to the to the bank to withdraw some money, they tell you they don't have it. You see, so you know, this is again, it's a shell game that's being played, and really no one is accountable. You know, how can you just say, well, we're bankrupt. We need money. Give us money. Give us billions of dollars. And so the government just gives them billions of dollars. But is anyone showing the public the books? Of course not, because that money's been stolen. They would have to show us that they've stolen the money, you see. And this is the case in real estate. It's the case in banking. It's the case in insurance. It's the case in the stock market. And it's the case in government. So why are we following this? why are we listening to these people anymore?
Yeah, we're facing ethical and moral crisis, and this has been going on so long time. As a matter of fact, I think you can trace the roots as far as, I don't know, at least hundreds of years, maybe thousands of years, when well, obviously things in the past were not exactly like today. You know, it's quite rather new phenomena of having a all around government. In the past, in Europe, for example, a few hundred years back, you know, people didn't actually realize what the government was. In a way, we're talking about it today. They didn't trust the government. You know, they didn't trust anything coming out of the centralized organization or whoever was in charge at the time. For example, there was a time when people trusted private money more than they trusted government money. And the government needed private bankers to guarantee and secure the government money. And now we actually just in the complete opposite side of the cycle. So things change and a lot of good things has been forgotten during the decades and the centuries. And this makes it, it's easy to forget the ethical and the moral grounds and the basic rules. And these rules have been also mixed up and on purpose and by accidents and trial and error also been dropping off our law books. So like we previous time we talked about the law and order, seems to be that now we're not talking about ethics and morality and the law and how these things are actually related. So nowadays we cannot say that the government or the, so to speak, public services and these centralized services we somehow seem to like and use, that they have anything to do anymore with the ethical and moral way of living. This is the descriptions that we see in the economy, for example, in a way that it's okay to spend recklessly in public, but it's not okay to do it in private. If you do it in public, you get a better job and you're in the media as a hero. But if you do it in private, like that, the guy you mentioned about the Ponzi scheme in private when he took private funds. But you know, now talking about the pension system or the governmental official systems, which are pretty much same mob things, or they are pretty much the same scenes in a larger scale. They are just bailing out banks which are bankrupt, and they don't let them to go bust. And still, yet the private companies and private institutions need to face the responsibilities, and they're going to jail for the fraud they're doing, and if they're stealing money. So we're facing this funny situation that for some people it's okay to steal in a monumental scale, but smaller scale it's just completely the opposite, and you have a very dire consequences of your actions. So no wonder we are a bit paranoid and also schizophrenic what's happening around us.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned this relationship. That the government needed the private money, to succeed. I mean, we're talking about these wealthy bankers or these wealthy industrialists, and really those people were always working in concert with one another. They came to a point, I think, if you really look at how government has turned out, to where through their lobbyists in Washington, that's a phenomenon that's there, and I'm sure it exists in the same way in Europe. It may transpire in a different manner, but lobbying is a nice word for bribery. giving gifts and paying for special privileges to earn a consideration on a particular way that they want the government to enact laws. So they're basically turning the government into a puppet of big business. And they realized when they could do that they would keep doing that and compromise these people, put them in a blackmailable position so that they now had to do the bidding, regardless of whether it was the right thing to do or not. And we're seeing this more and more. It's pretty much across the board now that maybe one or two exceptions, the majority of our Congress and our Senate are compromised. all the people in the so-called administrative agencies that are posted by presidents, you know, the leadership is nominated by a president, and that includes the Treasury. The Federal Reserve is a foreign corporation running the nation's wealth, which is not in our Constitution, shouldn't even be happening, you see. So you have already the interests are ingrained into taking the money or taking the assets of the nation, you see, as ransom, in other words, as collateral. And that's what's happening, and people are really unaware of that. They think they own their house, they own their car, they own their possessions, and the way everything has been given on this fiat system and this usury credit system, people are unaware that these things can be snatched from them if they fail to recognize the corruption that's going on. They think, well, the government says I have to do this, I have to do this. And you know, it's okay if the government's right in what they're telling you to do. But if they're telling you to do that because it facilitates organized crime, then there's a problem with that. And we know that that's going on all over the world. They have the war on drugs, the war on poverty, the war on terror, and they are creating all of it. You know, they are the authors of that, and they are the actors. They're the script writers, the actors, the producers, the directors, and they want us to be the audience and just watch it and pay for the ticket, pay for the privilege of watching it. It's like being in a movie, isn't it?
Yeah, complete Washington movie. With a bad script.
Yeah. And it's the same movie over and over, right? They change a few of the actors. And they make them stars. They make them millionaires. And they brainwash the people into worshiping those people. Sadly, many of them do. You know,
they say that in Hollywood there are 12 scripts around all the time. They're just repeating those, you know, storylines. But it seems that in the Washington there's only a few of them, maybe two scripts around. So, you know, it's just
Republican and Democrat, right?
Yeah, that's one. Making warfare on, you know, on other countries, and making warfare in the citizens. So, you know, that's pretty much what it's about. It's about greed. It's about getting money. It's getting about power. So pretty much the same stuff. All the time.
So where do the monster movies come in then?
Well, that's only you know, every 4 years or every 6 years, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, now I'd like to talk about your book, because taking all these into consideration, we're talking about things, and really we could go into details, and any one detail. We could make several shows about it. There's no point in dwelling on those things. That's a reality of the way the system has been created and the way it's moving. Now, on your last visit and prior visits on this show, we've talked about your outlook on how to deal with these things. That, you know, you can run all this stuff through your mind, and then you have this internal ping pong game going on in an empty hall, you know, with ceramic walls. Okay, and when you hit the ping pong ball, bounces off the wall, and you hear this great echo in between your ears, and that's what we call a thought. And we have that ping pong ball bouncing around inside our head all day long, creating these thoughts. And you speak about the moments when the ping pong ball might stop, you know, when it lands on the floor or on the table and it bounces a couple of times and it stops. And that's that moment of silence where there's nothing being thought, there's nothing being heard, there's nothing being said. And there's information in that silence, isn't there?
Yes, the silence starts to speak, and it doesn't speak with the words. It doesn't come in the same way as our thoughts appear us. It comes in a way of inspiration and feelings and in other ways which you have to discover yourself. But certainly it starts to speak. So it's metaphorical way of saying that it will start to speak to you.
Mm-hmm. And when you hear it speak, does it make a sound, or is it a feeling, or is it a combination of things?
It's a combination of things, and like I said, it's a metaphorical way of saying it. So it's not the, you cannot say that you hear things like that. So, but you know, like I said, you have to feel, get a feeling of it yourself. You have to experience it yourself. And one way to say is that each and every moment you know what you need to do and what you need not to do.
Mm-hmm.
How does that sound? You know, if each and every moment you know what you're supposed to do and what you're not supposed to do and what is right and what is wrong from your perspective, obviously. But, you know, I would say that it's quite an easy way of living. It doesn't mean that your circumstances are getting, well, they might be getting easier. But, you know, the thing is that you focus on the things which are required to be done at the one particular point in time, and the rest will just, you know, you can just omit it. Basically how you do it is that you do what you feel like doing. I don't, and this, there's a fine line, and this is very fine line about it, that what you want to do and what your ego and what your thoughts want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So your lower self, so to speak, but if you follow in the higher one, then you exactly know what is it at your best interest to do at this point in time. And if you only do those things, you start to follow the stream or the flow, so to speak, it means that things come quite unnatural for you. You know, it doesn't take an effort to do those things, and it also means that the things are, you know, all the things are just clicking. You know, some would say that they are coincidences, or you know, you're having a lot of these synchronicities. Exactly. And it's, you know, these things. Everything just goes smoothly, and this is how it happens, and this is how it's supposed to happen. If you're doing those things, would you need to do, and they have a purpose in your life. They just come to you, and you don't have to make a big of effort. And the struggle in life comes when you are not following your flow. Everyone has this flow, but you know, if you don't find it yourself and learn to use it, and one of the easiest way to do is this is to silence your ego and separate your ego. I mean the voice in your head which is talking all the time and giving you these thoughts, and if you regard these thoughts as you, who you are and what you present, And you think that they are actually your thoughts, which in many cases they are not. They are just something which are just coming to your head, and you're picking up them elsewhere. So it becomes very confusing and difficult to identify and separate those things which are genuine and real from those ones which are not. But with a lot of practice and self-inspection, you can become better with that one. And it means that your life becomes more relaxed, and you're becoming more certain, and you are more determined what you're doing. You never should be, you know, arrogant, but you can be more like humble or humble. You have more humility how you're doing those things and approaching the life, because you are not sure what is going to happen. The uncertainty is certainly there, so the change is only variable you're having, but this continuous moment, this new time, being in the moment, this new moment each and every time brings you surprises, because you are not making those expectations out of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You are not projecting your beliefs and your thought patterns to your current moment, and this means that you can live in a way which is quite light and this way relaxed, it doesn't mean that you are not doing a lot. It doesn't mean that you are not achieving a lot. It just means that you can get those things and you can get things done effortlessly. And there's in Asia there's a saying, in the East they call it Wu Wei, the path of the least resistance. You know, knowing mm-hmm. exactly what to do and when to do, and the rest will go, and you just ignore them. And this is one way to live. And looking at the world today, you know, it's easy to see that not so many people are following this way of existence.
Yes. From a perspective of many, many people, most people, in fact, you know, when there's a problem, usually one looks to recognize the problem and then determine who will take the blame for the problem, right? We call that denial. And it doesn't matter what the problem is, as long as someone else can be blamed for the problem, then we shirk our responsibility for that. And denial is probably one of the most commonly used methods for ignoring problems. Now, if we look at what a problem is, basically it's just undesirable results. It's something turning out in a way that we determine is probably the least favorable. It wouldn't be the one we would choose, and yet because it has that problem has manifested itself on some level, we have chosen it, haven't we?
Well, the first thing what you do is you labeled it as a trouble. But what if I say that it's an opportunity or is it a challenge?
Yeah. But I'm just speaking about the way people see it when it first presents itself.
Yes, exactly, and I'm talking about the same thing from a different angle. It's the first thing what you do is that you label it somehow, and mm-hmm. and this makes the whole difference in the following sequence. What's gonna happen? If you see it as a trouble, it's a negative thing. If you see it as an opportunity, it's a positive thing. If you see it as a challenge, I think it's somewhere between these. But if you see it as a trouble, then you already having decided, you know, what is your take on it, and that nothing good will ever come out of it, and you just have to cope and struggle and so on. But if you're taking a side, on the matter. But if you've been observing your life, you see that there's always circumstances, situations coming to you. Events which are sometimes positive, sometimes negative, meaning that, you know, they're good or bad in your perspective, but they always occur and they're always coming. Mm-hmm. And if you can step back from them, because you know that, you know, when you're eating a bar of chocolate, you know, too much chocolate, you know, soon you will be sick. It's the same thing, you know, today you're happy, tomorrow you will cry. So these things will come as certainly as the sun will come up, it will go down. So all the things which are coming to our life, they can teach us something. And what we can do and what is in our control is the perspective, how we take them and how we cope within. Are we resisting and denying that even the problem exists? And this is typically one of the things we do. You know, we regard it as a problem, if your car, for example, breaks down, you know, it is a certain kind of problem. You know, it doesn't work anymore. But if you face the fact that it doesn't work anymore, and you know, there's nothing more to it, it just broke down, and you know, there's no good or bad in the situation that your car doesn't move anymore. It's just the fact of life that it doesn't move anywhere. Then you can take it as a challenge that yes, now I have to move from this point on to the next one, and how I do it. Do I leave the car? Or do I tow it somewhere? Or what I do? Or you can actually take it also as an opportunity. Great, now I can get rid of my old car and buy a new mm-hmm. one. Or you know, take a road trip in a completely new manner and just you lift your thumb up and off you go. So mm-hmm. there are always opportunities and discoveries you can make, but it's it's the mind, which your thought patterns, your beliefs, which are bringing you the same solutions, pretty much like the Washington D.C. So that they are the old ways of dealing with all the situations you're having. But if you are not expecting anything from the moment, if you are living each and every moment as it is, as new, as a completely new and never ever before happened situation like it is, then you could actually do something different. And if you start to follow the silence, you can actually, well, most of all, you personally might be the most surprised what's going to happen, because you never know, you become quite unpredictable. You know, mm-hmm. crazy things can happen because, you know, you're creating, you're coming out of the innovative way of seeing life, and this means that you're creating something new also for yourself, so you're not repeating yourself, and this makes life exciting. And all the grayness of the life, you know, this problem attitude comes from the perspective that you're repeating. It's more like the mechanical way of seeing life, that you just have to respond to all the you know, you're reacting pretty much, and you're pretty much reacting also the same way all along, no matter what kind of circumstances or opportunities or events are coming your way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What comes to mind on the basis of what you just said is that most people will look at a problem and just on the hope and the prayer, or we say a wing and a prayer, that that the next time you try to do something the same way that resulted in a problem, that this time the problem won't appear. Somehow the problem won't catch up, you know? We repeat the same methods, in other words, and whether they're mistakes or not is subjective, I think. If we're being objective, we're seeing it from the outside the box, and we will see the point at where the problem reappears, and so that creative aspect that you're touching upon, that one taps into when they listen to the silence, that creativity that comes through is really their true essence. Really, what they're going to hear is their heart, what's already inside them. It's not something that has to arrive or that has to be given to them. They already possess it. Do you agree with that? Or
yes. The way that you say that, you know, things are repeating themselves, that's coming from your mind and from your past, from your experiences beforehand, and you like the mechanical machine, mm-hmm. and like a mechanical machine, you get the same responses each and every time. So
that's the monkey
problems,
mind.
Yeah, that's the monkey mind. And for that reason, you know, it seems like that, and that's a fact as well, that, you know, you may getting similar kind of situations, and they keep on repeating, and till you realize that you're doing these things the same way, and you cope with the situations, you change something in you, then you can move on, and these occurrences do not follow anymore, so they don't repeat themselves in the future, and you have new mm-hmm. challenges and discoveries in your life.
Yes. Now, when we have positive experiences, what the business world and the financial world calls success, and they're not always of monetary nature, but people look at success as having accomplished something that was beyond anyone's imagination, beyond that individual's imagination. Say a musician that gets a hit record, they write a song, they record the song, and it becomes a hit, and they become very famous and very successful, very wealthy, and then they become part of this mental construct, you know, this image, or what we call an icon. And yet the person may not feel that they've matched up or that they've earned that, in the sense, because they don't see themselves that way. they see themselves as just as having achieved the goal, and they're ready to move on to the next creative episode. And yet the public somehow wants to latch onto that and pull that down, if you know what I mean. You know, if you imagine that your success is like a balloon filled with helium, and it's rising and rising and rising, and it can see more of what's available to itself, the people will pull that balloon down and try to keep it near them. We have a tendency somehow to pay too much attention to the accomplishments of others without paying attention to our own business, if you get my meaning. And I think that's where all these programs that are created to cause us to pay attention to meaningless things keep us from hearing the silence, you know, and tapping into our own individual creativity. We're shown the script over and over again, aren't we? The same script.
Yeah. Quite a few people are following their own path. And how do I know that? You know, how I observe and how being coming to this conclusion. It's quite easy. Look around you. How many people are doing things a bit differently? You know, how many different people you see there? You know, how many people are not watching TV? How many people do not own TV? Mm-hmm. You know, doing things completely differently. And we see that, you know, quite a lot of people are like us, you know, doing things the same way and you know, having mm-hmm. regular jobs and not doing odd things from our perspective. But that's freedom. You know, freedom is that, you know, you can do crazy things, you can do different things, you can do things differently and not do same way differently like all the other people are doing. So, like you mentioned about the entrepreneurs, you know, typically they're following their paths and they have and the path what they're following is the self gratification in a way that, you know, they're getting by working, you know, it's they're getting the satisfaction by doing those things. It's not the end itself which is the only thing which matters. It's typically seen that, you know, now he got a, you know, 10 million, you know, 100 million, or he got a real jackpot with this thing. Typically they don't care about the money, or they may appreciate the money, but, you know, it wasn't the purpose to get on and start with those things. And but the money is just coming, you know, as a reward for the things they did for the community, for the society, mm-hmm. for the services. But like you mentioned, that we typically, when we're looking at other people, we idealize them. We just pick up a few things and we build a concept around it, and then we have in these archetypes of, you know, people, you know, rock stars, and we know nothing about the person behind the public appearance. We know nothing about their private life, and like you say, they typically want to move on, and they don't know which song is or which album will be the most successful one, or, you know, which will be the biggest hit. And I'm not a musician, but I could imagine that if you had a hit in the 70s and you still have to go on tour and people just want to hear a few songs you did when you were in a hangover in your tour bus, you know, in the 70s, and, you know, you have written material for the next 2 decades and nobody wants to hear about them. You know, nobody wants to hear your latest song, and everybody wants to hear about those, you know, hangover songs.
Yeah.
So it's now I think you've got the picture, so, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, what you're describing is sympathetic vibrations, right? In other words, those that run the record companies build these stars by pouring massive amounts of money into promotional campaigns to market a particular artist, because the powers that be see a certain role that this individual can play if they capture the attention and the minds of a certain percentage of the masses. Okay? There are people, you know, and I really don't have to name names. That's not what this is about. But there are people who know how to sing. And when you start making comparisons to singers and some of the incredible gifts that many singers have, and then you see someone who can't sing in tune make it as a singer, you know, become a star, then you have to ask yourself, what is it that is being represented here? Now, I'm not saying that we should hate that person because they can't sing, but certainly they shouldn't rise. It's not normal, let's say, to rise to a level of success because of your looks. Looks has nothing to do with the way you sing. You know, I think of Andrea Bocelli. He's a fantastic singer. He's not someone that they promote necessarily like they promote Michael Jackson, because Andrea Bocelli is blind and doesn't dance for obvious reasons, that it would be possibly dangerous to his health to be dancing. And he's performing a different kind of music. But the man is an incredible singer. He's very, very talented. That's not to say Michael Jackson isn't talented, but then we are sold this package, this image package, which with it comes all of these perversions that the media jumps on right away, and yet in the end it's they walk away with more money, you know, they have more money in the bank accounts. So everyone has followed this drama that really has nothing to do with the art form. It has everything to do with everything else but the art form itself. And, you know, we have many, many examples of that in professional sports and in the entertainment industry, whether it's an actor or a musician. Scandals, they like to call it, you know. So the reason I bring that up is we're not really seeing things with clarity. We're seeing through the colored glasses that we've been given. Remember, like the three-dimensional movies, the 3D movies, where they give you cardboard glasses with cellophane over each eye, and one is red and one is blue. And when you look at a motion picture screen in a theater, you think you're seeing in three dimensions. You know, mm-hmm. It's an optical illusion is all it is.
No.
And that's what life has become, just a series of optical illusions. And what we, you know, are attempting to do here in this conversation is make people aware that if you're going to live illusions, you can create your own. You know, you don't have to follow the ones that someone else is showing you. You know, it seems to be that we depend on that. It's almost an addiction, isn't it?
Yeah, it's easy to look outside, and it's quite more difficult to be your own actor and, you know, producing your own movie on a continuous basis, like a 24/7. So, just a few points I would like to make, you know, for what you stated. I don't see the distinction between them and us. It's if we're not talking about forced, you know, centralized forced issues like the government is using violence or threat of violence. That's a completely different thing. But if we're talking about the voluntary market, we're talking about the private sector, then each and every one of us is actually making the choices. We are selecting what we're doing, you know, we either by buying or not buying, and, you know, focusing our attention, our money to certain things, and just, you know, deciding, you know, just what to do and what to like and what not to like. So more people like Michael Jackson and less people like Andrea Bocelli. So it's just the way the market is. And there's something I think which is quite important also to understand that if the market selection process, it doesn't tell anything. Well, the selection process happens by, you know, itself. You know, it's the invisible hand, you know, by each and every one of us making our individual choices. We actually deciding what's happening and who becoming a star and who is not becoming a star. Yes, the media companies can put a lot of money and they can make someone star by just, you know, repeating itself. But at the end of the day, still, we are buying the records. If we do not like them, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, flops. You know, they've been boosting some artists and their recordings are just, you know, just coming off the shelves, so people aren't buying them. So they're just, you know, writing it off quickly and moving to another thing. So they are not in control of this. We are in control, each and every one of us. And this is the great thing. But it's quite important also to understand that if you look those who are, so to speak, the most famous in a way, it means that they have some qualities or they have some features which are shared across and among the most amount of people.
Mm-hmm.
So almost everyone has something in common with Michael Jackson, because, you know, Thriller is one of the greatest albums in the world history, and these songs, you know, resonate with all and it's every one of us. But then going to the opera, then going to the, you know, for example, in the literature, it's the same in literature, for example, you know, these stories, you know, these fictional stories, you know, people like them, Harry Potter, and, you know, they sell hundreds of millions. But then you're going to the philosophy, or you're going to the poems, you're going to the different genres of music, you have a less audience for them. So
yeah.
It doesn't mean that they are valued less. It just means that less people are, you know, it's more selective, the group. So the monetary economy doesn't give you the value of the things. It just shows that how many people are appreciating those things.
Mm-hmm.
And this way, it's quite important also to realize that it's not the measure of success or failure. It's not the measure of the greatness of your masterpiece or not. You know, like Nietzsche, for example, was saying that when he was writing his things and maybe 20 people read his book, he said that, you know, no one understands me now, but wait 100 years and I will be, you know, I will be a god. You know, everybody will just, you know, love me. And not everybody loves him, but, you know, he's certainly a, you know, superhero in a way that, you know, we all recognize his name. So.
Yeah.
So this is the thing that, you know, there are people who are ahead of the curve, so to speak. They are like Nikola Tesla, you know.
Yeah.
Not so many people understood what he did and, you know, what he spoke about. But, you know, take 100 years, 200 years, and, you know, he's the hero of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something quite delicate, but it's also how the society is also structured. So we are interacting with each other and making decisions, and what pops up in the media are those things which we share in common at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And media is playing the same game, and the music industry, for example, the big labels, you know, they want to predict, and they would like to pick and choose the hits. They just want to make money, and that's okay, because, you know, people are willingly giving the money for them, for the things, you know, they're getting in return. But, you know, it's just a different take on the things you were saying.
Yeah. I'm referring to this phenomenon not in a sense of saying this one is better than the other and the people don't have a choice. Of course they have a choice. I think I'm referring to it to a large extent in the programming aspect of it. You know, there's a certain method, a certain approach to motivating people to go out and spend their money, and then the art form becomes a business instead of staying an art form. You know,
no.
You know, Picasso could always sell his paintings if he was alive to sell them. You know, to create them, he would get more money for them now than he ever got, just if he came back and to life and started painting again. Or Salvador Dali, or, you know, any of the more recent masters who have sort of underground followings. You know, it's either the ultra rich, or those that really know art and appreciate the stylistic impressions and the approach to art that both men had. Making very different statements. Picasso could be very simple and say a lot with two lines in a painting, you know.
Indeed.
Yeah. And Dali was a social critic and a political critic, and really challenging this reality, you know, painting melted clocks hanging from tree limbs and that sort of stuff.
But then he was like a Michael Jackson of the time. He was quite successful also commercializing what he was doing. Yeah. He did it on purpose.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So we're out of time, unfortunately, Peter. I would want to keep going on with this because I know you had some more responses to what I said, and I interrupted those a little bit. But I have to do that so that we can segue to our goodbyes until your next appearance on the 25th of this month. So I'm looking forward to that, and this has been a very interesting conversation. I can't wait for the next one just so we can continue it. So
sounds good, and it's always a pleasure to be in the show, and I'm also looking forward, and certainly I will set up my clock, you know, maybe we are already in the Europe or so, in Central European the daylight saving time as well, so
yeah,
it goes more smoothly.
Yeah, it took my atomic clock 3 days to catch up. It's amazing. Even trying to reset it manually didn't work. It tried going back to the old time frame. So even that clock knows something's not working out right. Things are moving too fast.
So, yeah, it's better to follow the sun than the artificial clock.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for being on Evident Footprints. I want to encourage people to go to your website, fragmentsofreality.com. Take a look at your book. You know, what you're saying makes sense, and it is a workbook. It is something that people can apply to their lives and learn how to handle problems themselves. It's very painless, I have to say. You know, you have some very concise, simple ways of looking at things, and you know, turn off the TV and do a little reading. This book would do you a lot of good. So I want to thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, Don.
And I look forward to the next time. Give my best to all our friends on the other side of the Atlantic, and we're going to say goodnight to our listening audience. You have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and our special guest, Peter Kayander, and you can visit his site at fragmentsofreality.com. I encourage you to do so. Get a copy of his book. In the meantime, special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick for the sound, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in this evening or this morning, whatever the case is. In the meantime, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.